bits, dead on movie reviews.
Salutations and mutilations. You're listening to Otherworldly Culture Presents Dead On Movie Reviews. Tonight we will present horror movie reviews and lively debate here on otherworldlyculture.com and on future select Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern. You can join our live chat at that time by clicking on live shows link on otherworldlyculture.com's website. I'm your host, Tim Kretschmann, coming to you from the land of lakes and landfills, beautiful and smelly, Muskego, Wisconsin. It's our honor to introduce the Faculty of Fear panel presenting tonight's lectures. And we start by going to the Motor City of Detroit, where Michael Cieslik is a lifetime reader and writer of horror, mystery, and speculative fiction. He has served as an officer in the Great Lakes Association of Horror Writers and is the editor of the Eerie Tales Anthologies. Michael is the editor-in-chief of Dragon's Roost Press, and his works have appeared in a number of collections, including DOA Extreme Horror, Dead Science, Vicious Verses, and Reanimated Rhymes, and the collaborative steampunk novel Army of Brass. Now he's here to kick some ass. Check him out at thedragonsroost.net. It's Michael Cieslik. How are you doing, Michael?
It's Michael Cieslik, the owner of the longest bio in the history of podcasting.
Oh, yeah, I've done one that's longer. That's fantastic. So glad you're with us today. And, of course, everybody is waiting for me to introduce the ladies. We'll start with Tracy DeLeon. She's been in over 11 films, including a film that you can now be seeing everywhere, Family Possessions and Nun's Curse, which is out on Amazon Prime and is in my queue. She is now a good friend of the show with numerous appearances here. And it's a thrill to have her on the show again with us tonight. Here's Tracy DeLeon.
Hi, guys. Hey, Peggy. Hi.
Glad to have you. Thank you. Thank you for not forgetting the host. Yes, we all noticed that. We all noticed that. And last but not least, we have Peggy Christie. She's an author from Michigan that has written books like Hell Hath No Fury, Dark Doorways, and contributed to short story collections, Eerie Tales, Myths, and Mayhem. She is also proud to be the owner of the lamest scream ever recorded on the Scream at the Screen. I will not do a single intro of her without saying that. You can check her out on themonkeyisin.com. That's all one word, but never with just one word. Here she is, Peggy Christie.
Hi, Tracy.
Really? You know, I think I'm going to make a rule that I'm not going to let into the biographies the word myth. It's too difficult for me to pronounce quickly when I'm trying to run through these. Just too difficult for me. Looks like we have an active chat room. We want to thank everybody that's in the chat room tonight. Thanks for participating in today's merriment. We have some really good movies that we're going to be talking about tonight. And as is usual, I once again forgot during the prep of the show to decide what order we were going to go in. So I am going to randomly take this finger and press a button over there somewhere, and we'll see who it's going to be. Isn't that exciting?
The whole system goes down.
Well, I'm going to first get the finger right about in the right area. And we will see. Let's see what happens. Who have we got? Hey, congratulations, Mike. You are first tonight.
Please go first.
Mike, what have you watching?
I watched The Old Ways, which came out in 2020, and it satisfied a craving that I had, for starters, because I've been looking for a good possession slash exorcism movie that didn't have all the same stuff that I'd seen before. And while this does rely a little bit on some of the exorcism and possession tropes that you're used to seeing, comes at him in a completely different way. It is set in Veracruz, Mexico.
Okay.
They're literally using the old ways, hence the title. Doesn't say what.
So by old ways, are they talking about they're using payphones?
They have dial-up service. They actually have.
Oh my God.
The Bruja has a pager. So when someone needs to be exercised, she goes there. She makes a call on the payphone. You're a silly, silly man, Tim.
I was picturing that they also used credit cards and actually went through one of those imprint machines with the three-part carbons.
I believe the official name for those is the Ka-Chung Ka-Chung machine. Yes.
How is that spelled? We need to put that in the transcript.
So we start with a young girl in Veracruz. There's a healer that's working on her mom, and her mom is saying, "Oh, everything's going to be okay." And she says, "Don't worry, I'm going to be strong for you, Mom." And then Mom's face just flips out completely with these sharp dagger teeth, and it was not what I was expecting right off the bat. We cut forward to the present after this, and we are introduced, to
hold Christina. On. Every time that happens, you have to have a drink. So there is a drinking game that goes along with the show, which it's going to be also anytime I interrupt somebody, and that should get everybody schnockered pretty quickly.
Well, I'll be dead.
Christina is a reporter. She has gone back to where she was born, and we quickly figure out that she's the young girl from beforehand.
Okay.
She's gone into a series of caves that her cousin told her not to go into, but we are first introduced to Christina when she is shackled to a bed with a bag over her head. And she's like pleading with her captors, "You don't understand. I'm American. I'm a reporter. I'm just down here. Contact my cousin Miranda. She'll explain everything." And it turns out that she was found in this cave, and they believe that she is possessed. And the first chunk of the movie is her trying to convince them that she's not possessed. She, you know, they're wrong. She is a very scientific based person. You know, she grew up in Los Angeles. She thinks they're all crazy. And it kind of hints that this is going to be like science versus their faith. Is she really possessed? And then, spoiler, she is so possessed. She's major possessed. I don't want to give away a whole bunch of spoilers on this, but their room that she's kept in has all these weird symbols written on the wall. And when you realize what these symbols are coming, you know, the significance of these symbols, you're like, oh crap, she is in for the wall.
I'm going to spoil it for everyone. The symbols that are on the wall are all names that Prince thought he might use. And he actually possessed by Prince and wears purple through the second half of the movie and refuses to allow Weird Al Yankovic to do parody songs of his music.
Now I might as well give away the part where she like forms a whole bunch of other bands, but then also plays instruments in their background.
Rope Morning Train. Yeah.
For the most part, it's just four characters. It's Christina, her cousin Miranda, who is still holding a grudge for the fact that Christina went to Los Angeles and never contacted her again until she needed her for this story.
Okay.
I don't remember the name of the male character. He says almost nothing. He's got very little dialogue. And then the Bruja Luz, who was played by Julia Vera, who did an amazing job and is just creepy as all. Right there. There she is. Just creepy as all get out.
It sounds like you're forgetting somebody, though. It would be Taff Cap, the artist formerly known as Prince.
I am not going to. I don't want to spoil it. I told you. I'm not bringing it up. Not bringing up Mr. Rogers Nelson.
I'm sorry.
There are some really good effects in this. I don't think that the... I was a little worried that the whole thing between the cousins was going to get in the way of the possession portion, but I think they handled that really well. And I was fairly pleased.
Fairly pleased, which sounds like he wants me to go to the grading. We still have to come up with a secret handshake or something to tell me when to go to report card.
I didn't jump the gun this time on this.
Okay, so let me have it. What's your grade for The Old Ways?
I'm going to go with a B+ on this one.
B+. That should be that one.
There were some portions that were a little predictable, like, okay, I see what's going to happen here. And, yeah, that was a big bit of foreshadowing right there. There's actually one scene where she's having a discussion with the Bruja's son, who is the older gentleman that's helping her. And you're like, okay, that's like double foreshadowing right there. We just got two things. We know what's going to happen.
Wow.
But all in all, fair and pleased with the ending.
Did you catch this on streaming somewhere? Which service, maybe?
Yes, this is on Netflix right now.
Okay, on Netflix, so people can check it out there and enjoy. Fantastic. Well, thanks a lot. We do have a busy chat room. I want to thank everybody that came out. And now I am going to press my next random button, but it's down by a third. So not as random.
It's going to be someone that's laughing, apparently.
Well, you just wrote Rochambeau.
just tittering away over there. Okay, let's see. Who is it going to be? Oh, it's black and white. It has to be Tracy. Tracy, what have you been watching? I think I'm going to start instituting the random. All right.
I always thought that they were random.
Oh, no. There's a plan. Do you not? Okay. I understand. Make fun of Tim. Tracy, what have you been watching?
I've been watching 10 to Midnight, and it was released in 1983, and it was directed by J. Lee Thompson.
Probably.
Yeah. I think he was also co-writer, possibly.
Okay.
It stars Charles Bronson, Lisa Eilbacher.
Okay.
Gene Davis, who is the serial killer,
ooh,
who used a knife as a sexual device. And
as one does.
Kelly Preston, a sexual device.
Wow.
His murder weapon is like his orgasm,
yes,
basically.
Yes.
We're just going to go right on in.
Okay, that's a double entendre right there.
We're going all in.
Go on in. Don't worry. It'll come to you.
Okay, so Charles Bronson is a LA detective, and his daughter is in college to be a nurse. And there's this guy who fixes typewriters for, I guess, a newsroom.
Okay.
And the serial killer, likes to haunt or stalk women that reject him. And what he does is he gets sexual satisfaction, not by his penis, but by his knife. So it's very hard for him to stop because it's, again, orgasmic weapon that gives him sexual pleasure. So after a while, after he starts killing women, he meets at the funeral the detective's daughter. Which is Lisa Eilbacher. Am I saying that right, Tim?
I believe so I'm not going to correct you.
Okay, if I'm not, please tell me.
Okay.
That's wrong. Okay, anyway. So the serial killer starts to look at her only because this detective is relentless at getting this guy because he's killing all these young college students. And
because that's what you do.
That's what, you know.
Yeah.
Serial killers do, I guess.
Yeah.
Anyway, so in the end, I don't know, something happens and the serial killer's just crazy. I don't want to spoil it because I know people haven't seen it. And but
it is fantastic. This movie, I love. I love this. This was one of those VHS tapes that was everywhere in the early VHS days.
Yes.
And I don't think a lot of... Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Like I said earlier, it was like, I remember sitting on the couch and my mom being like, oh no, don't watch this part. And I'm like, oh, I'm watching. I don't see what he's doing. It was creepy. I mean, even watching it now with, you know, it being so early 80s.
Right.
Cinema. He's creepy. He is very creepy.
Yeah, this is Dirty Harry versus the serial killer. Is basically what the concept of the movie is. Here's the thing. The serial killer is really creepy, and it's really well done. It isn't, you know, Jason going around. This is a guy with sincere mental insanity going on.
Yes.
And I just realized why. Because I didn't know who J. Lee Thompson was. Okay? So I popped it open on Wikipedia. Are you ready for this?
Holy crap,
this guy wrote a lot of great movies and directed a bunch. Yeah. Now, he started back in 1950, and he made some duds in there. Like, I see one called An Alligator Named Daisy. I can't imagine anybody. But then, in the 60s, listen to this. He does The Guns of Navarone, followed by Cape Fear. That's two in a row there. Really good movies. Then he's got a little bit, you know, some lighter stuff. But then in 1972, he directs what I think is arguably the best Planet of the Apes movie, Conquest of the Planet of the Apes. That's the fourth one where there's the revolution and everything. I was like, holy crap. He did The White Buffalo in 77. He did this one, 10 to Midnight. And then he went into full-on 80s mode. He made Happy Birthday to Me right about the time he did 10 to Midnight. But then he makes King Solomon's Mines. Did any of you ever see that movie with Richard Chamberlain?
Nice.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That was like an answer movie to Raiders of the Lost Ark. They're like, what have we got? What have we got? What's in the public domain? And then he also did Firewalker and Death Wish 4, The Crackdown, which might be the worst of the Death Wish movies, which is hard to even imagine. And then he made another one with Chuckles Bronson, Kinjaiti, Forbidden Subjects, which is, I mean, really bad. but the guy made Cape Fear. He made Cape Fear, for crying out loud, that Scorsese would remake. I mean, oh my God. But this movie, I think, is more on the Cape Fear side. In fact, some of the things that you see the serial killer doing, he's kind of like taunting Chucklehead Bronson. And
very so.
Yeah.
It very cunning, and he's very smart. He's very smart not to get caught. It reminded me of another film, and I wish I could think of the name of it, and maybe you can help me. Somebody might be able to. It's the guy who's also a serial killer, but when he attacks the women, he's already in the women's apartment, but he paints himself to match the walls. What is that called?
It's got Carol Kane in it. Carol Kane. Yes. Somebody is watching you. I can't remember. It's the one with the really great beginning. What was it, Michael? Yeah.
That it's something very close to that.
Yes.
It's not Dressed to Kill we're getting in the chat room. Exler, you got to know this one. What the hell? Somebody is watching you. Someone is watching me. Somebody is dancing in the nude outside.
That one intended.
I know it's Carol Kane that's in that movie. What the heck is it?
I'm sorry, Tim. I got you thinking.
This is the horror movie where a guy paints himself like the background.
The walls of his victims. Like, yeah. If it's a brick wall, he will paint. And it's like exact. You literally do him until he is in movement.
He's a chameleon, is what he is.
Very much so.
I am quickly trying to look this thing up.
No.
Yes, it is. That's it. It's When a Stranger Calls. That's it.
It must be the second one. It's
When a Stranger Calls Back. It's the sequel, I think.
It's the sequel. Anyway. Oh, my goodness. Well, thanks for sending us down that one. Yeah, When a Stranger Calls Back or Stranger Calls 2.
That's my next one when I review. I'm going to do that one.
All right. Fantastic. Oh, well, it's time now to open up the grade book. Let's see. Why does it keep doing that? Okay. Here we go. What are you going to give 10 to Midnight?
So even though it's an older flick, I loved it. I'm going to give it an A.
Nice.
That's actually what I would grade it to. It really is a good, underrated. Not enough people have seen it. I think it's because Chucklehead is in there. People just kind of say.
I watched a lot of Chucklehead.
I did like Charles Bronson. By this time in his career, he was working a lot for Golden Globus and Canon. Film, and his movies weren't too good at that point anymore. And I think that hurt it quite a bit. But I think it was in an awkward time. It was an awkward time for movies because that was a very hard R-rated movie. But they were trying to push everything through the video stores. You know, maybe I caught it on HBO originally, but I know I caught it on video quite a bit. And they never, I don't think this ever made it to commercial television because there's just way too much nudity.
I would be surprised if it made it to NBC, CBS, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it wasn't a Friday night movie, but I don't even think it made it to UHF. You know, it just kind of fell into this awkward little thing. So all I'm gonna be assigning this to Jeff at some point because I think he needs to see it. It's good and scary, and that's what he keeps telling me. Just not scary enough. He's a collector and he says I need something a little more brutal, so we're gonna be finding those for him. Okay, so this leaves us to, it is now your turn, Peggy, what have you been watching? There's a little dance that goes along with it as well.
I've been watching the 2009 film called Ink, I-N-K, directed and written by Jamin, I think, Winans or Jamin Winans. I'm not really sure how to pronounce that, but...
Okay.
It's kind of a mix. It's like a fantasy drama, and it's got some creepy elements to it. Basically, a little girl, Emma, has her soul stolen by this creature, this really ugly kind of monstrous thing named Ink. And if he gives her soul to this group of people called the Incubi, they will fix him. All his scars will be taken away. He'll look good. He'll be fine. And he'll get to join their ranks. Okay. So what we see throughout this film is that there's all these different kinds of worlds. There's our reality.
Okay.
Just everyday things. And the director made a choice to film things with different colors so that you knew which world you were in. So reality is just straight up clear, just it is what it is. The world of the Incubi is green. There's another Incubi group called the Storytellers. Their world is gold tinged. They're very hippie-esque is what I always thought of them. I don't know why, but I did. And then the soul world, when your soul leaves your body, it's kind of bluish gray, kind of something like that. Now, what we know here is that the Incubi are the creatures that cause nightmares. The Storytellers are the people that give you good dreams and give you hope. So what happens is in the reality of our reality, John, who is Emma's father, lost custody of his little girl because he was too involved with like making money and working and drinking and got into drugs. So his father and mother-in-law got Emma taken away from him. So she's now in a coma in the hospital, and he's like, okay, whatever. Remember, you told me she's not my kid. I don't care. There's nothing I can do about it. But once her soul is taken, the Storytellers realize they have to go save her. So what they need to do is come into our world and wake her up so that her soul can come back to her body. Hmm. And all the while they're doing this, the Incubi are kind of influencing John. And, you know, the Storytellers are trying to help, and Ink's doing his thing. And there's a character called the Pathfinder who can influence our world. He can start chain reactions. So he gets John to end up at the hospital where Emma is so that he can make the right choices
life. Hold on.
Just leaving her. Yeah.
Before this movie, do they give you like a map or something?
Nope. You just got to go in like you're learning how to swim, man. Just jump in.
Wow. Now, does it?
You just have to figure it out as you go.
Does it make sense, though? Or you have to watch it three times?
Completely makes sense. Because what they do in the film is they, like, here's what's going on in reality. Then they go to the scene. This is what's going on with the Storytellers. And it's like, oh, this is how it's connected to what's going on. And then you see over at the Incubi, like, oh, well, this is what's happening while this other. So you kind of understand how everybody's parts are interconnected. So it just gets to the point where John finally makes the right decision and goes to be with his little girl. And that's kind of the whole, I think, message of this film is, even though like the Incubi are super scary, very creepy, the way they're dressed, their world, and then you have, you know, like these other odd characters that are working with them that are just like, ooh, they're very unsettling. Okay. The whole message of this film is got a lot of like hope and redemption, and like shame and guilt are what motivates John most in his life. And that's what the Incubi are counting on, because they want him to do all the wrong things so that he doesn't save his little girl and they can get her soul and blah, blah, blah. And it's cool to see John doing stuff in life and you know, off in the peripheral that he can't see are the Storytellers and the Incubi fighting for him and for his little girl. So it's actually, especially like right now, I think it's kind of important to see movies like this, because it's like, yeah, a lot of us don't think we're worthy. We think we're crap, or we're making wrong choices and we're not being very nice people. But it's like, you know what? You can't always do the right thing. There is always a choice to be able to be the bigger person, and that, you know, this gives all of us hope that things will turn out okay. So, and I think, and this is like the second or third time I've seen this film, and I was crying just as hard. I was getting
goosebumps
just as much. So everything is done really well. It's an indie film.
I was going through trying to find pictures for this movie, which thanks again, team, for finding movies that was hard to find. great work there. You continued to never disappoint me. But this one, I find these pictures of one guy looks like one of the creatures from the Dark Crystal, and it looks like parts of the film came from Sin City, and it all in all, I kept getting thoughts of Dark City, the movie Dark City.
Absolutely.
And I was like, what the hell is this thing?
It is, yeah.
And you just explained it. And I'm still asking, what the hell is this thing?
There's a lot of stuff. There are a lot of moving parts. There are a lot of worlds that are connected, but they're not connected. And everybody, it's probably one of the more unique films I've ever seen. And for an indie film, the acting was all really, really well done. That little girl who played Emma held every scene she was in. I never sat there and thought, okay, child actor who doesn't know what the hell she's doing. I did not see anybody acting in any of this.
They weren't caught acting.
Like I saw the characters, not the people playing them. And it's like, the music was really well done. The cinematography, the photography, all of that was good. They actually use the device of music and rhythm with that character right there. The Pathfinder, he has black tape over his eyes. He can't see, so he has to feel the rhythm of the world in order to make chain reactions.
Oh, that makes sense. Well, I'm looking at this G-man. Well, what's his name?
Yeah,
G-man Winans. This guy has almost as many composer credits as he does direction. Four of his 9 movie credits are shorts. One's a video, so that's probably a short.
He has a documentary in there, too.
Yeah, there's somewhere. A documentary that who knows what the hell. This guy is different.
It's about the mental health of children today because there's so much like social media and being online and like how that affects them, I guess. I think that's what it's about. So interesting guy that this movie came out of all that other stuff. It's like,
yeah, this is
so different.
This is
from
this is a rabbit hole. This guy here.
It's very much so. And I think it's one of those where you can watch it a bunch of different times and probably see a few new things. Like there's one scene where the Pathfinder is trying to create that chain reaction to get John into the hospital, and he's counting, he's doing 4 counts, and every time he's counting, you see even the extras are moving in rhythm. They're either walking in the same rhythm, they're putting things down right on the beat. It's so absolutely fascinating, this whole thing. And I'm not going to spoil like the twist ending or how it ends or any of that stuff because it's actually super emotional.
You know,
and I'm crying like a baby.
You're talking about rhythm. One of the movies I think of when you're talking about that is Baby Driver. Have any of you on the panel watched Baby Driver?
I don't think so.
It's one of the last movies Kevin Spacey made before he couldn't make any anymore. It's about a guy that's a getaway driver for a crew of criminals, but he has tinnitus, so he's always wearing a Sony Walkman or something. He's always got earphones on, and he's listening to music, and that's kind of like the soundtrack to the movie. But even like when there's gunfire and stuff, it's to the beat of the music. They made sure, like, everything. He'll be driving, and it's like the car is dancing to the music. It's really neat that way. It was done by Edgar Wright, who made all those movies with Shaun of the Dead and all that stuff. And he made, anyway, he's made a lot of interesting films, so. If you get a chance, Baby Driver, I know it's got Kevin Spacey, which is, you know, a lot of people don't dig anymore, but I'll still watch 7.
It's a brilliant actor.
Yeah, it's worth a viewing. It really is. John Hamm in one of his absolute best, and I'm not a John Hamm fan, he was really good in that movie. It's worth seeing, and it's not a horror movie, so it's a little off subject, but it fits some of the things you're talking about. But this sounds fascinating to me.
It is. Like those incubi, like on the poster, those guy with the glowing eyes, it's like those screens they have over their faces shift. So while they're looking at you and grinning, their mouths are like, and their eyes, they are so fucking creepy. I hate those things. But
like slime coming out.
No, it's just like it's almost like a TV image that's warbling. That's what it looks like. It's like it's a TV image. It's so weird. I don't know how this guy came up with this stuff, but every aspect of it, there's so many things going on. It's probably one of the best films I think I've ever seen.
Okay, Mike, did you see this as well?
I saw this like around when it first was available, not at the theater.
Okay. So
whatever format it was in. I remember seeing this at someone's house, and I need to see it again because, like, this was
really good.
Wacky go crazy. And
well, it is available on Prime. I just checked. $4 or $5, I think, for renting it.
Not so bad.
But I'm guessing, you know, the good thing about Prime, you're not sitting there and wondering if you got some bootleg tape. It's usually about the best quality. And this one I would want to see in as high a quality as I could.
Yeah. Yeah.
Though I think I would want to color calibrate my TV prior to going in. Just because I see,
like, in the images that keep scrolling through, it's like how each one is like a different color.
Right. I thought I was grabbing different movies.
Yeah.
And I kept checking the metadata and, you know, stuff, and I'm like, no, this looks like it's the same thing. The guy with the big nose throws me because it looks like somebody was doing a high school theater version of The Dark Crystal to me.
But most of the time he's got like a dark cowl over his face, so you can't even really see him.
See the schnoz.
So, yeah, until at least like halfway through.
Is it true that was played by Jimmy Durante late in his career? No? No, yeah, okay. The only big nose joke I have. All right, well, that means it's time to open up the grade book. Let's see, what is your actual grade for Ink from 2009?
I am totally giving this an A+.
Real?
Yeah.
The plus is applied. An A+.
I don't know if I've done an A+ before, have I?
I don't think you have, no. You're not ridiculously angry at every movie that you bring in, like some people I could mention. But I don't think you've handed out A+ either.
Okay.
So, all right. Well, there's one button left. Let's see randomly who will come. Oh, look at that.
Hey, it's me again.
And no, is it? No, it's me. All right. Yay. All right. Well, I have the dubious distinction of reviewing now this movie called Dolls in 1986. It was made by Stuart Gordon, directed it. Brian Yuzna produced it. If those names sound familiar, that's the same team that was behind Reanimator. And for those of you that enjoyed Reanimator and looking for another great movie, watch Reanimator twice. It also was brought to you, I don't know to what extent he was involved, but Charles Band was involved with this while he was at Empire Pictures. Charles Band is the guy that started Full Moon Videos, which I used to watch a ton of those on VHS. And I've said enough now that Exler will be going into the chat room and complaining about Charles Band because he's not a very nice person. But he's the guy that created like Doll Man and Puppet Master and all that stuff. So it's kind of interesting to me from that perspective because this movie feels like a precursor to the Puppet Master movies. Big time, you know. What to say about this movie? This movie has problems. One of them is not the acting. The acting is just fine. In fact, the male lead, Stephen Lee, does a really good job as Ralph Morris, I guess is his character name in this. I've seen him do comedies all over the place. He's a big-time comedy actor. The odd thing is, I'm looking at all these pictures that I found of Dolls, and here I found a few. I have not yet seen his face come across, and he was the main character. As far, there he is. That's Stephen Lee. I thought he was very good. Now, there were two characters that I absolutely hated. It was the two women characters that Stephen Lee picked up. One of the women actually was a model in the AHA video, Take On Me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which I was, like, shocked because I always, I mean, I loved the girl from the AHA video and absolutely hated. What? I'm sorry?
I loved her shoes and socks.
You just loved her because she was quiet, Tim.
No, it's beautiful. Absolutely gorgeous, and I fell in love. But not in this one. My goodness. The characters that they were portraying were abysmal. And there were a number. Really, there's like this Ralph Morris character, and then there's the young girl, and pretty well every other character in the movie you really hate. And to me, that's a bit of a problem with your movie. You got to have... I realize they want lots of victims. Okay, great. But when everybody is asking for it, you don't feel fear for your main characters because you're like, well, they're decent people. They'll be just fine. You need somebody that's just fine to get it once in a while so that you go, hey, this is a dangerous situation for them. I wonder also if this is a morality tale, because the young girl that's in there, and this was 86, so this was really happening a lot starting in that time frame. There was a lot of bad divorces, and this is about a couple, the new mother, the stepmother, for the young girl, it comes from money, and he simply took the girl out of the divorce to save from alimony and child support payments. And I'm like, okay, are we trying to say something about that? What's going on here? So I didn't know if that was a whole thing, because frankly, I was just as happy when the two female characters got it, because they were just annoying. So, ultimately, and I say this a lot of times in my horror movie reviews, ultimately, you have to say, is the movie scary? If it's scary or causes tension or makes you wonder what's going to happen next, that's a successful movie. 10 to Midnight, I say he has that. You really have a mystery. You're wondering what's going to happen. This thing, pretty well from the beginning, you're like, oh, the dolls are going to come to life. I mean, it's. I think you're 6 minutes into the movie and you know that's going to happen. Now, you also know that because all the advertising and the picture and all of that. So when that's your big reveal that happens an hour some into the movie, and it takes us almost an entire hour to get to the doll effects where they're coming to life, you're like, well, wait a minute. Then you should have advertised it in a different way. You should have named it something else, because it's just too obvious that that's what it's going to be. So in a lot of ways, I was sitting there for that first hour just, when is this thing, when are they going to start putting it into overdrive? It just took forever. And I don't know that Stuart Gordon is really the problem here. I don't know if the actors are the problem. I think the script... I think they had a half hour Tales of the, from the Dark Side here. I don't know that they had a feature film. I just don't. Now they did have some pretty bloody portions of it. There's a scene where one of the dolls is sawing the legs off of people. That was kind of a disturbing image, you know. But And also in this Chucky world that we're in today, I'm sorry, what, Tracy?
More disturbing than the poltergeist clown?
No, nothing in here nearly as disturbing as poltergeist. Nothing. And I think too, by now we're used to, I mean, Chucky's an icon. The whole dolls coming to life thing, it's become a trope, if nothing else. It showed up so often ever since the Twilight Zone first had the ventriloquist dummy. In fact, I know that with R.L. Stine, he said his best-selling Goosebumps books were all those ventriloquist dummy coming to life books. And I thought all those books, like, people just collected all of them just to say they had them all. I didn't know people actually read them.
How dare you, sir? You have two authors on the
I was a little bit old for those when they came out, and I actually decided to read Night of the Dummy not too long ago, which I guess would be the OG Night of the Dummy, because I think there were like three different versions or something that did over the years. It wasn't bad, but it seemed long to me for a kid's novel. I was like, wow, this is a lot longer than I expected it to be. I thought it'd be like a pamphlet that I could get through in an hour. And it was a bit of a surprise. But I do love the Goosebumps movie quite a bit. That's a guilty pleasure of mine. Anyway,
Did you read the books?
What?
Did you read the Goosebump books?
I've read a grand total of three of them so far. I read about three of them, and I went, okay, I guess I'm not the right age anymore for this. Back to Stephen King for me. By getting back to this, I really don't know what to tell you. Now, one of the interesting things is the evil stepmother character was actually played by Stuart Gordon's real wife in real life. So I think it's one of her rare appearances in a film. I don't know. Now, you can see by some of the pictures, this was an extremely 80s MTV influenced type of movie with some of the fashion choices that were going on there. Overall, this movie is just too long. Kind of like this review, the movie is just too long for the content behind it. At the end, everything's rather neatly wrapped up. It ended a little too easily. You never really felt like your heroes were in real trouble, because ultimately, it's a bunch of dolls. Just pick one up and throw it out of the way. They're not particularly fast. They're not particularly clever. They just kind of they aren't nearly moving like Chucky, where Chucky would run, and you know there was a lot of that going on. These things are just automatons, kind of moving toward you, and just like, okay, I guess. If you wear leather shoes, you're probably safe. You're just ready to kick these things out of the way, and you'll be just fine. Now, I'm guessing from the reaction that some of our other panelists have seen this movie. Who else has seen this one?
I have. I love this movie.
I have.
Really?
Yeah.
I do need to understand that. Why do you love this movie?
I go into it because I'm not expecting anything like life-changing. I know right from the get-go that the dolls are going to come to life and kill off horrible people. And it's right. And I enjoy the little girl character. And what was the comedian's name? It was like, they were kind of the two main.
Stephen Lee, Ralph Morris.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he's like this kind of every guy, super nice. And of course,
he's great. Stephen Lee girl, steals.
So they kind of team up. And obviously the actor and actress playing the old couple.
Yes.
The actor goes on to actually play Toulon in the Puppet Master films. But the actress, I mean, she's from Great Britain, I believe. And she's had such a long and storied career before this. It was like, how the hell did they sign on? these, like, I don't even know, but I go into it just because it's killing everybody left and right. That's...
It is, but you got to wait an hour for that to start. I felt like if I could have dropped the needle at, like, 45 minutes in, I'm not sure I would have missed anything, because I immediately didn't like the characters.
Much. Yeah.
I don't know.
I hated the people as much.
I think I hated them immediately. I don't think I needed 45 minutes to hate them.
Yeah, probably only maybe 20, 25 minutes.
Yeah.
Been good enough.
I'm saying that. I'm not saying this to be mean. This literally could have been wrapped up in a 30-minute episode. I really do think so, because there's just so much. And here's the thing. It isn't like they're building towards something. It's just, you know, I think, Peggy, what you said made the most sense. They're just trying to make you hate these characters as much as humanly possible. I think they overdid it. I think they overshot. Because I was...
It is very much hyperbole, like how wicked the stepmother is, right, and how, like, what a douchebag the dad is, and then these girls are just there to rob the poor little old couple, who actually you think, even I think the old couple, it's like you kind of know right from the beginning that they're not just an old couple.
Right.
It's like they're not going to be pushovers. They're hiding something. But I do like how they get the dolls.
Yeah.
I think how their dolls.
Obtain the dolls.
Yeah, it's, you know, how the bad people are turned into dolls, and that's how they get them. Oh. So they're trapped. I like that. I think that's actually kind of, you know, very worthy of doing that.
It's neat, but I just felt like there was too much shoe leather. And I do think a lot of the, a lot of my problem was I read the credits. I shouldn't have read the credits. Because I'm in there, I'm like, hey, it's Stuart Gordon. Oh, my God, Brian Yuzna was involved, too. He directed Society. That's a great movie. Oh, Charles Band. Wow, he made a lot of stuff. And then it just keeps going and keep going. And again, acting is good. The direction is good. And actually, this movie, for a Stuart Gordon movie, it actually used light and shadow, which is unusual for him. He usually just lights the hell out of the thing. It looks like somebody's home video. And like, here's everything, nothing to hide. Like, Brian Yuzna does that in Society as well. In the movie Society, you sit there and I don't think there's a shadow in the entire movie. Everything is brightly lit and you're looking at this and you're going, what the heck is going on here? Just incredible. But this one, I thought it did set kind of a spooky feeling because of the storm, and it was at night, and it was in this creepy old house, and, you know, it really is like the beginning of a joke, you know, the motorists that their car breaks down and they have to find a place, you know, stay the night.
Janet.
And in 1986, they don't have a landline phone. You know, all that stuff. You know, kids today, they're watching this and they're going, what, don't they have a signal? You know, it's like, okay. Jeez. Go back in time 3 minutes. But I guess I felt the pacing, you know, when you compare it to Reanimator, the pacing in this thing is glacial in comparison to Reanimator, where they literally open to people screaming in a Swiss institution and all that. This thing, it's like, okay, we're going to slowly build this up. And I don't know that they build it all that much. That's, I guess, my biggest problem. It would be cool if there were more little steps until the big reveal. And again, I didn't feel as much of a reveal. You know exactly what's going to happen, like 5 minutes in. And particularly...
See, that's why you picked it up, though. You look at the...
It is. It is, but you have to realize, okay, as the filmmaker, as the storyteller, if you're going to name the movie Dolls, and you're going to, you know, everybody's going to know it's about killer dolls. Okay. then you know that, right? So then you got to hide something else. Or you got to... It's like learning to play poker with your parents and they have all the cards face side up, right? It's not fun. It's not fun. You got to hold a card or two, you know, to yourself. That's what it didn't do. Like Reanimator, I know that movie is about reanimating dead people. Great. But it goes all sorts of weird and wonderful ways. Society, yeah, I don't think anybody knows.
That it's called Dolls. You go in knowing there's going to be killer dolls, but you got to sit through 45 minutes of non-doll people before you get to the dolls. But, what a twist!
But that's... That works if it isn't tedious. And this went over that line. Now, obviously, for Peggy, she's more patient. Then it's going to work. You know, I feel like Child's Play. Obviously, this movie's got a lot of parallels to Child's Play. You watch Child's Play, and when Chucky comes alive, and you know that stupid doll's alive before he ever starts moving around. You're just like, oh my God, oh my God, it's actually, and because he's moving so much. They have him screaming at, what is it, Catherine Hicks, right? Yeah, Catherine Hicks, and he's calling her a whore, and he's just horrible. He isn't just moving, he's swearing and he's wielding a knife for crying out loud. I mean, it's just really big, and here it felt like, the big reveal was just like one step. Now, what they did is instead of making the dolls, each doll kind of deadly on its own, it's by the mass of them that there's like, what, 50 or 60 in there? They're coming after you. So it's more of the lumbering zombies of George A. Romero than the fast zombie type thing. Anyway, I almost forgot to grade it. I am going to grade it now. And I'm just going to give it a C. For me, it was a little too slow and needed to move along, much like my report. But it just didn't do what I was hoping for in the movie. And I think a good part of that is I had a very different expectation than what actually came up on screen. And that's always dangerous when you go into a movie that way.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it is time now for... Let's see. Come on. Something should show up. There we go. There's otherworldlyculture.com. We're going to go through the websites. Otherworldlyculture.com. You can find that. On the internet, we have stories, we have videos, we have all sorts of crazy things always up there. Something new, something fun for the whole family. Well, maybe not everybody in your family. There's a story
depends on your
out
family.
There. Yeah, there's a story out there right now about all the movies that Adam watched over October, and a listing of this. I don't know how he stays employed. That's way too many movies. And then we also have the website, themonkeyisin.com. That's Peggy's. And Tracy's is tracydeleon.com.
They'll be at work, Don, Tim.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And... The dragonsroost.net, is that the good one right now?
They're both about, it's still kind of puttering around.
Okay.
There's going to be some, now that Halloween's over, there's going to be some overhauling.
Okay, and we need to tell everybody about Horror Realm. A number of us are going to be going out there. I know Peggy is, I am, Jeff, Mike Exler, Rich Dalzotto, Adam are all going to be out there. Tracy, you're trying, I know.
Yes.
So we're going to be out there at Horror Realm. As you can see, the entire cast of Casualty Friday podcast, Kane Hodder, Tiffany Shepis, Felissa Rose will be there. Danielle Harris is confirmed to be there. Scott Taylor, Christina Klebb. So there's going to be kind of like a Halloween reunion type thing going on. Lots of great stuff. But most importantly, I've been to Horror Realm a couple of times. It's really kind of a fun, relaxed show where you can make friendships and possibly Shanghai people to be guests on your podcast. So that's absolutely crucial as well. Let's see. And also coming later this week, Dead on the Bases is going to be on Thursday at 7 p.m. Central, which is 8 p.m. in Eastern Standard Time. So come on out and join us. We would love to have you come on out and join our chat room. That's always a good time. Anything for our panel, anything that you're working on currently, projects that you'd like to tell everybody about?
I have a few scripts that I have in hand, but other than that, I don't have anything to say yet. But you, Peggy, you got some good coming up soon. Horror Realm.
I was going to say, yeah, I'll be at Horror Realm, but I was just on the show like 2 weeks ago, so I don't have anything new writing-wise.
Well, hopefully you sold out and you're out there at Horror Realm saying, yeah, I got nothing to do. That would be a good problem, right?
Yeah.
Selling out on Friday is a wonderful problem to have. Anything for you, Michael?
The third book in Jen Hager's Moonlight Medicine series was just released about 4 days ago. So that's available at thedragonsroost.biz and on Amazon and anywhere local, you know, anywhere you like to buy books.
All right. And you can also go to the forest, cut down a tree, send it to Michael, and he'll transform it into paper.
I will transform it into paper and write it out longhand, and I guarantee you will not be able to read it.
It would be fantastic. Well, you'd be barking up the wrong tree. I don't know why I felt I needed to do that. I just did.
Whatever, Dad.
I'm sad for myself. I'm sad for myself. Just a programming note to all of our listeners and viewers, and of course we get a lot more listeners after the show that don't see the videos. You can always find the videos out on YouTube.com, or you can go to our website and we always have links to the videos. So if we're mentioning things, what we're seeing, and you're like, what is that? That's what it is. Dead on Movie Reviews is going on a hiatus over something I like to call Christmas, and we'll be coming back probably in January. Dead on the Bases is on its last of two episodes, and they will be going on hiatus because we're going to Horror Realm. And over to Christmas season, we might put some surprises out there. We're kind of got a couple ideas that are bouncing around. With us all going to be out in Pittsburgh at the same time, something will happen. So we'll try to figure all of that out. And just to stay informed, always go out to otherworldlyculture.com and you can find the latest show notes and scheduling notes. And once we get the season started up again, it'll be fairly regular, the programming. Okay, that also took longer than expected. Thank you everybody for tuning in tonight. And we hope you had a fun and safe Halloween. Remember, Halloween, like Christmas, doesn't really start or end when the calendar says so. It's when you decide it's time for Halloween to be done, and we just aren't done with it yet. When you aim at horror, make sure your aim is true and dead on. We will see you next time. And three more buttons. There we go. Otherworldlyculture.com.
I got it. I was going through the Endspiel.